Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Better Living. I'm your host, Nick Carissimi. Continuing our conversation about Brothers Keepers, their website, brothers-keepers.org. I just got done speaking with co-founder John Loudenslager. We are going to switch to the other co-founder, Jack Fanning. Sir, how are you doing today?
How you doing, Nick? What's up?
Not much. How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you coming in. We talked to John a lot about kind of just what this organization is and what you guys do. What we're going to talk about is how you got to be a part of this organization and what you were doing before. And also, you know, you're the perfect and best person to talk about what this organization does for the people that are a part of that. So let's just kind of start off with your background. You were in the military. What were you doing?
So I was an Air Force Special Operations Combat Controller for 13 years. Came in the late 90s, 97. Kind of got sick and tired and running around with some of the guys I was running around with, and I was a little bit crazy. Big time into sports, you know, athlete. I'd raced motocross when I was a kid, and I was a high-level soccer guy. But, you know, I like to party and have fun, too. So, I'd get in a little trouble from now, time to time, and like most military guys. So, I was the perfect candidate to go into special operations because everybody, I straightened up, you know, my act, so to speak, and went in to the service, and everybody I met in that career field, they were all like me. They're a little bit crazy too, so it was perfect fit. But yeah, I was in there for 13 years before I got hurt on a military free fall jump.
So when people think about special operations, to me, they think of, you're going to think of maybe Rangers or Navy SEALs or Delta. I don't think that a lot of people hear about the Air Force and what you guys do, or specifically what your job is, but I've read a little bit about what you guys do, and it's absolutely fascinating. For those that don't know, you guys are, you're an air traffic controller, essentially, for a battlefield. Is that a good way to put it?
Yes, we bring a lot to the table as far as in the special operations community. We go through 2 years of training because in our cases where you got your combat controllers and then you have your pararescuemen. And we're quiet professionals. There's not very many of us, maybe 400, 450 combat controllers, you know, in the entire Air Force. Yes. So you're looking at a small group of folks, but we have a large impact because of the mission set and what we can bring to the table for the other guys, like the Green Berets, the SEAL teams. We work with the Rangers and we work with coalition special ops teams, and we get attached to those teams as one individual. So you got a 12-man team, then they add the Air Force Combat Controller, and what we bring to the fight is the air-ground interface for that team. So you're on the ground doing whatever they're doing, kicking in doors, hunting down the terrorist, and while they're doing that, I might have 13 aircraft overhead and helicopters that I'm controlling. So you got to have a three-dimensional thinking. It's very intense and pretty complicated. Controlled chaos is what we like to call it. But so we bring a lot to the fight. We specialize in, we're air traffic controllers. We go through that school, so we can take down an airfield, jump in, seize the airfield. It might be a dirt strip. Could be out in the middle of the desert. We can create a runway with light configurations, and then we can sit on it, turn the radio on, and start landing aircraft, and they download different assault vehicles or whatever. And So since we're good at air traffic control, we're also good at close air support, which is the big ticket right now, ever since 9/11. The piece we bring as far as close air support is phenomenal. I mean, without that, we would have never beat the Taliban down from...
So calling an airstrike, for people that are I'm trying to make sure that people still follow us. So calling an airstrike
at close proximity, and we're talking to the plane, maybe 200 yards from the target.
I was going to ask, how far, what would you say is the closest that you actually had ordnance dropped near you that you coordinated? What's the closest you would get to having a bomb basically dropped on top of you?
Pretty sketchy, about 125 meters, I only had a B-1 bomber to work with. We kept getting attacked up in Nuray Fire Base in the most northeastern part of Afghanistan. We had a little bitty fire base. Nobody had ever even seen Americans up there or helicopters or anything, the local populace. But these guys kept attacking us and actually got hit by an IED, but I got lucky on that one. But they started getting real ballsy and confident and started hitting our base every night. So I asked for 4 hours of aircraft every night, and I received it. I would get A-10s or B-1 bombers or a gunship, AC-130 gunship. And these guys were getting in through the fence line, and we had to drop 2,000-pound JDAM on their asses. Oh, excuse me. But and I was puckered up. I mean, to be honest, it scared the living daylights out of me. But we had to do what we had to do.
I'm obsessed with watching YouTube videos of guys that call in airstrikes. You'll be watching these guys just sit there, and it seems very still and very quiet, and all of a sudden a bomb hits, and the reaction that those guys have to it, seeing the shockwaves come out, the whole bit, it's fascinating. Can you explain the first time actually seeing something like that being blown up in front of you, to see that concussion, that force?
Yeah. First you get the visual, the light, and the burning fire coming off of it, and then you feel the woof, woof, the concussion hit your chest, and it's pretty exhilarating, especially when you take down those dirty savages that they are. They've killed a lot of my friends, so it's personal to me, and I enjoyed dropping a 2,000-pound JDAM on them, because they deserved it. And it's pretty intense. It's hard to explain when somebody's shooting at you what that feels like. It's scary. And if people say they're not scared, they're full of it.
Of all the jobs that you could have had in the Air Force, you said that you were in for a while and then you wanted to go into special operations. What was it about this job specifically that appealed to you?
Well, actually, I had signed up to work on munitions and bombs, which would have sent me to Minot, Dakota, North Dakota, which would have sucked. And luckily, when I was in basic training is when a barrel-chested, big old combat chassis guy busted through the door and popped in a videotape and said, "This is a voluntary-only career field if you want to sign up." And I looked on there, and they were riding dirt bikes and jumping out of planes and combat scuba diving and shooting guns and dropping bombs and doing landing planes. And I raised my hand. I said, "That's for me." I didn't even know Special Ops was in the Air Force, and a lot of people don't, Like I said, there's a small amount of us. So I raised my hand. It's a voluntary only, so they say, "Okay, PT test tomorrow morning," and then you got to swim and run and do push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, and if you pass, then you go on to the next stage, and that's where the two-year pipeline came into effect.
Did you make it your first time? From what I have read, a lot of guys wash out the first couple of times that they attempt to be a part of these organizations. Did you make it that first time? Were you always a part of this?
Oh, hell yeah. First time. Oh, yeah.
Is that
like
rare?
Like I said, I was an athlete.
Is my understanding correct? Is that rare?
Yeah, there's a high attrition rate in that career field. It's extremely high. I think we started out, our class was about 75, my initial pre-scuba class. And at the end of the 2 years, there was four of us.
How long were you part of this organization?
13 years.
13 years. That seems like a really long time.
I would have done 20, but I, you know, got paralyzed on a jump. So back in 2010, but no, right now guys are getting crushed just because of the amount of deployments they're doing. Mm. You know, I got friends that are doing 20, 30 deployments, you know, by now. All of my friends are retiring right now, and like I would have retired this last year.
And you did six tours.
I did six, yes, sir. And then I became they voluntold me to go to North Carolina and be an instructor. So I did that for 3.5 years. Was actually a great time. But to be frank, I was itching to get back in the fight. I wanted to smoke some more bad guys. And so I volunteered to try out for JSOC, the Tier 1 guys. And they selected me. And then you go through a green team process, which is about eight months of high intense training. And at the tail end of that, with just a couple weeks to go, we were doing a pretty intense, sketchy military freefall jump called a hey-ho, which is high altitude, high opening. So you jump out at a very high altitude as a whole team, and then you immediately, everybody pulls their chute as soon as you exit, and you offset the target, you know, between 10, 20 miles. And so they never see a plane even coming overhead. And you fly with GPS stuff and different things that we have as a formation to the target area, and land about a mile short, cache your stuff, and then you're off to work. So we do this in the middle of the night because we gain all the advantage at night, and we do it under night vision. So my night vision goggles had come dislodged from my helmet when I pulled the rip cord for the parachute. Had a good parachute. I didn't panic. I've had a lot of jumps. And so what I'd do is I'd let go of my steering toggles. I'd grab my night vision because they were dummy corded, of course. We dummy cord everything, meaning it's attached by a string. And put them up to my eyes, found the stack or the other guys I was with, and then put them back down where I couldn't see. I'd grab the toggles, keep kind of close to them, but I didn't want to take out one of the other guys, so I stayed a little, just enough where I could see them, and did that about 50 times on the way down, because you're in the harness for about 45 minutes when you're offset of the target like that. And got about what I thought was about 200 feet above the ground, to went ahead to lower my rucksack, and smack, I hit the ground going full speed, never had the opportunity to hit the brakes. So I flipped over and hit my head, and that pushed the C3 over the C4 and instantly paralyzed, and it got lodged there. And so I could not, we're on comms the whole time, could not use my arms to call to the team leader that I was down, you know. And so I could hear them all looking for me, and that went on for about 20 minutes, and I could feel myself dying. And so I had my talk with God, and I said, hey, if this right now is the time, then I'm ready. But I'm not ready because I have a wife and son, and I can't do this. So I just forced myself to breathe. I was also getting choked out by my chin strap, and I had a collapsed lung. My right lung was collapsed, so I couldn't breathe. So I was doing the shallow breathing like this. I mean, it was brutal. I was awake the whole time. And right before I felt myself going, I asked God if he'd let my best friend at the time, Jason, find me. He was right behind me on the jump. And within 3 to 5 minutes, he found me. And it was him that found me, and then he called for the pararescuemen to come over. They started cutting everything off of me and called for the medevac, and then got medevaced, and there just so happened to be a neurosurgeon working that night at the hospital. And that's another thing I think, you know, God did. And I didn't know it at the time, but I think he kept me alive for a reason, put me in this chair so that I could help other veterans and family members. I didn't know that until a couple years had gone past, you know, after that.
Well, I think it's a perfect segue into Brothers Keepers. This is right. This is what you're doing with your life now, and you're helping other people. Best sentence on the website, which once again is brothers-keepers.org. The downtime between jumping out of planes and blowing stuff up is where the transformation happens. Excellent sentence. It seems to me that this is exactly what this organization is all about. You're doing extreme, super fun things, jumping out of airplanes, going hunting, whitewater rafting, doing all this stuff. But it gives you a lot more than just having an experience. What does the ability to do these things again impart to these people that are part of Brothers Keepers?
I like to lead the way on this because I can't move my arms or legs. So I'm a pretty hard case. I mean, it's rough. I've gone through numerous caregivers, right? It's been a struggle, but I'm also hard-headed. And, you know, being in the special operations community kind of, you know, prepared me for all this. And I can deal with it. And I have been dealing with it. And I stay positive every day. I get my ass up and I do something. And a lot of guys are struggling with a lot of the stuff they've seen over there and had to do over there, you know, coming back with missing limbs and just you know, war is ugly, and what it can do psychologically to a person, it's a crushing blow. For me, getting out there and doing fun extreme stuff like was awesome. Like, hey, I can still shoot with my mouth. I got an apparatus where I can go hunting still. Oh, this is cool. And then Task Force Dagger took me on a dive trip. I was like, I can dive as a quad? Are you kidding me? Wow, this is amazing. And then I was like, I wonder if I could jump out of a airplane. Well, yeah, you could jump out of an airplane. People have all these adaptive, you know, I started figuring out that you could do just about anything. There's no limitations. You just got to have your mind right. So, Then I realized, hey man, I can help other guys. Like, and getting out there and doing those things are fun, and that's exciting for a few seconds or minutes or whatever it is that we're doing, snow skiing, jumping out of planes or whatever. But the real magic happens in between that, when the families get together, because we're all about the family. It's the whole family unit that gets hurt, not just the veteran. And I can tell you firsthand, everybody is affected, and your extended family and your friends. When we bring the whole families and they're talking, and they realize, hey, you've got similar issues that I do. You know, you're struggling in this department, or, you know, thinking this bad thoughts, or, you know, my spouse is doing this, and or maybe the spouse or the kids are struggling, and they realize they have similar struggles, and they start to open up to one another. And they're telling their war stories, but the families are also talking, and they're telling, hey, how do you get through this type of day? Why do this? How do you do, you know? And by the end of it, you're family, and you've only known them for 2 or 3 days. And that's why we say, you know, we're bringing them into the Brothers Keepers family. And it's for life. It's not just this one retreat. So we bring them in, the families become tight with us, they become tight with each other, and they realize, hey man, there's more to life. When you see a 5-year-old kid snow skiing with his dad that doesn't have legs, I mean, I'm getting emotional right now just thinking about it. It's amazing that looking at that kid, seeing his dad, like, wow, you know, my daddy just jumped out of an airplane. You know, I didn't think he could do that. He's in a chair. Or whatever the case, that dynamic is incredible, and then to see the families talk amongst themselves and interact, and the healing that goes on with that, just being able to bounce ideas off each other and, hey, I'm struggling, so are you. Hey, you know, and there's other people out there that care and know what you're going through because they're going through it. So that's what it is, man. And that, I mean, it, I just can't explain it. That, you know, all the fun stuff that we do is awesome, but it's the little things, the conversations, and what we take away from that experience is the magic.
What is the thing that you get out of Brothers Keepers the most now? Is it letting guys understand that they still have the ability to do all these great things, or is it building that family? Because since you've come in today, you keep on using the word family, about building this family up and making sure that people are included. So for you, what do you get the most joy out of as far as Brothers Keepers is concerned?
So me, I really love putting together these retreats, and Johnny and Tammy and everybody in the organization can tell you I'm a pretty hard case about it. I try to do everything myself, but because I'm like in control, and there's a lot of things in my life where I'm not in control, and you know, but I don't know. It's the military coming out in me. So I love putting together and finding the families, man. Like who? So what I love to do is I'll take a family that I've had on a retreat, and I'll say, who do you know that's struggling, or who do you know that could use a retreat like this and benefit from it? And then they give me two or three families, and then I talk to them, and usually, because everybody else is hard-headed like I am, I have to talk these guys into freaking coming, just showing up. I'm like, you don't understand. It's fun. Come on out, man. You're going to really benefit. And a lot of guys are, you know, retreat. I don't know. I'm like, dude, seriously, you need to come. I'm telling you, get your ass up here, you know. And then we take them first style, man. We have other organizations like Veterans Airlift Command that people donate their private jets, and then pilots donate their times. It's a nonprofit. They fly these families for us first class in a private jet up to Utah. Like, and I organize all this stuff. It just about kills me. Because, like right now, you know, we got a retreat coming up on Sunday, and I still need to come up with a couple more flights. But
it's more coordination.
It's fun.
I mean, this is exactly what you did in the military. It's exactly like you basically are just continuing what you were doing in the military
exactly,
with Brothers Keepers.
And that's why it's so much fun to do these retreats, and I'm coordinating all these aircraft to get families to one place, you know, so they can have a good time, and just to see them grow and expand and be able to get out of their living room every day and go experience life. If they can snow ski at Park City and they're paralyzed, they can get out of their house and go shopping or go see a movie with their family or go see a event, sporting event, or whatever the case may be, or just go to the you know, whatever they need to do, go hang out. They can do it. It might take this crazy experience for them to hit it, for it to sink in that, hey, I can do a lot of things with my sons or my daughters or my spouse. And it's also great for the kids and the spouses that are having to be caregivers, and they get to release a little bit and they bond. And now we have spouses all over the country that are talking, and North Texas, that have a tight knit, you know, they got somebody to call or to lean on when they're having issues.
And the family grows.
And the family grows. We start out with a base of a tree, you know, and then the tree's getting taller, and the branches are branching out, and those branches have branches, and it just keeps going, and that, it's growing and growing. And I'm just so proud of our team, Brothers Keepers, you know, that have been involved in doing this. And we love it so much. And we're in it, man. I mean, we're in it 100% for all these families out there. And first responders, too. Not just, we're talking a lot of vets, but, you know, we're taking a female police officer, Lisa Ramsey, up to Utah, and she's going to be skiing. She got shot 3 times, Fort Worth Police Department. And she's still working there behind a desk now, but she's still working. She was like, oh, I want to ski. I'm like, done. And so she's going to be on the ski trip. So we support our first responders. Gold Star families, like Johnny was talking about, you know, they're hurting, man. And to have an experience like that with another Gold Star family, I like to bring at least two families. They end up bonding. And like one of our Gold Star family fathers said, they always carrying around all this heavy luggage and baggage from, you know, what happened. And when they check into to the retreat, they got to set the luggage in the corner and not think about it for a few days. And then he said when he got the luggage back at the end of the retreat, it was a little bit lighter, you know, and that was huge. Just, I mean, the impact, man, that we're making on lives is what it's all about. And so I love it.
I want to keep, yeah. I shouldn't have just booked an hour amazing, for you.
Isn't it? Yeah.
I should have booked more time. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap it up because you guys do have a big event coming up that I'm going to talk to your sister about. I really, really, really appreciate you telling your story. I appreciate you coming in here today. I appreciate all the work that you're doing for everybody else but yourself. And I can't thank you enough for being a part of this show. It really means a lot to me. Jack Fanning is the co-founder of Brothers Keepers. Their website, brothers-keepers.org. Do me a favor and just promise that you'll come back so we can keep talking.
I'd love to come back anytime. Appreciate it, brother.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.